Folks, very excited to welcome back our next guest, James Corbett, award-winning investigative journalist. And since 2007, he's the host of The Corbett Report, an independent, listener-supported alternative news source covering breaking news and important issues from 9/11 to false flag terror to the police state, eugenics, geopolitics, central banking fraud, and more. Here's his latest book. Now, you might think this is called reportage, but it is not. It is repertoire. Okay, how do you say it? Reportage?
Reportage.
Reportage. Now, that sounds French to me, James.
Maybe. I'm Canadian, so I've always heard it reportage.
Oh, I don't know. You tell me. Those French Canadians, they're the sneaky, sneaky Frenchmen. You never know. Anyway, great to have you back. Thanks for being, I was just reading your book, which it's full of great stuff, right? And it's really amazing. We're going to talk about, what's coming with the, we went through the vaccine mandates and we had vaccine passports. I unfortunately had one of those because I got the vaccine and I got vaccine injured and I didn't know I was not giving my informed consent because they were lying to us. And they even gave us a different formula. Then they tested. It's so many illegal things happen. Are you still surprised? Let me just ask you, are you still surprised that people aren't more outraged that the regular people like the Democrat, the people who vote Democrat, put it that way, have not woken up to the unbelievable crime that was committed by the government and the media and the WHO and everybody else surrounding COVID? Like the amount of, they all scream, we just had a No Kings rally here because they're all upset about Donald Trump trying to make himself a king, even though the government's shut down right now because the Democrats have leverage, so he's not a king. But they don't care about the authoritarianism that led to 41% of Black-owned businesses being closed permanently during COVID. They don't care about that. They didn't care about being locked in their houses. They didn't care about not being able to go to work or feed their families or anything. I don't know. I could ask this question for an hour. What do you mean?
No, it's incredibly important because there is no better example of the left-right brainwashing psyop that is going on right now than if you went back in time 20, 25 years and you went to any leftist march anywhere in the world, let alone in the U.S., you would absolutely fit right in. Screw Big Pharma. We're against those big corporations. They're killing us. And everyone would agree with you. And now if you do the same, oh my God, you're a weird right winger. That to me is just, that's political brainwashing in a nutshell.
Yeah. And so the best kind of propaganda is the propaganda that where people don't know it's propaganda. That's how it works, right? And so I've had people, smart people on my show recently who vote Democrat and who have just repeating talking points about COVID from like 5 years ago. It's just amazing to me. Do you think that they'll ever wake up?
I think there probably is a point at which you've invested your identity so much in a certain political propaganda line that it would be very difficult for you to come back from it, which is why I think the COVID conversation basically disappeared so quickly, because so many people probably understood intuitively they'd been had, but no one wants to talk about it. I mean, even SNL was making fun of that, right? Where suddenly no one wants to talk about anything that just happened over the past few years. It's remarkable.
The only thing I saw was Dana Carvey and was it Mike Myers? Who's the guy he does his podcast with? Anyway,
David Spade.
David Spade, that's right. And they were making jokes about, you got to get a booster. It lasts till you get to the car. Then you got to get another booster for your car ride home. And then you get another booster when you get home. And so that was the only time I'd ever seen anybody in the mainstream make jokes about it. Besides, of course, Woody Harrelson when he's a real radical. He went on Saturday Night Live and told the truth about what actually happened. Yeah. Remember that? That was amazing. But I was reading your book and you talk about the systems of control because we went through a system of control in COVID. It was a big test. For me, I think it was a big test. They wanted to roll this out. They wanted to kill the economy during Donald Trump so they could make sure that he couldn't get reelected. This was definitely to try to make sure they would do anything. They impeached him twice. They did a FBI psyop called January 6th. They over-prosecuted them. They did four bogus prosecutions of Donald Trump, and each one of them get so that's what I think COVID was. And in the book on page 185, it says, but beyond systems of control that rely on brute force and naked aggression, there exists what Aldous Huxley describes as an array of non-terroristic techniques for inducing consent and inducing people to love their servitude. And people did come to love their servitude during COVID, and they still do. You want to talk about that at all? How people are, how they're made to love their servitude?
Right. Yeah. So that is in the context of an essay where I'm talking about that fundamental, not even a split, but just sort of a difference in strategy that authoritarians can use. They can go the 1984 jackbooted thugs with the boot on the face sort of tyranny, or they can go the Aldous Huxley Brave New Worlds, drugging people with soma and making them love their servitude kind of a tyranny. And either one is bad, but at the very least, when you have the 1984, you know, police state, big brother kind of police state, at the very least, people know that there is a tyrant, and they know that the boot is on their face. And there are ways to make people love the boot, I guess, but it's much harder. But when there's no boot on the face, what are you talking about? It's all good, man. Just take the shots. You're fine. That is way more insidious. And that doesn't work through outright physical violence, unless and until they need to bring that out, the iron fist and the velvet glove. But it's the velvet glove. All the things that you like. You don't worry, you'll get your cheeseburgers and beer. Remember when they were giving out donuts if you would take your vaccine?
Yeah, they give you
a symbol of health.
A burger and fries. De Blasio promised the people of New York if you went down to get, he's eating the fries as he's telling you, oh, these are great fries. Go get your booster.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that's the way, you know, tyranny and authoritarianism doesn't always look like what we think it looks like. And the worst kind is exactly what you're saying there. It's the propaganda that makes people believe that this is all good. It's fine. I'm with the program. So I'm going to be treated well by this system. Big Brother loves me.
Would you have considered yourself a lefty at some point in your life?
I am Canadian, so I was basically socialist by default. That's our indoctrination programming that we receive from birth. And so, yeah, I was definitely on the left side of the spectrum until I realized the spectrum is a lie.
That the spectrum is a lie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So also in the book, I have an essay on up-down politics that we talked about last time.
Yes.
Where they got the left-right thing, which, you know, it exists. It's real. But the more important thing is up-down, authoritarianism versus freedom.
I know you know a lot about Bill Gates. And so Bill Gates used to say this about climate change.
The world emits over 51 billion tons of greenhouse gases. And as we keep doing that, the consequences for human life will be catastrophic. And time is running out.
So that was Bill Gates, the same kind of fear-mongering he did about COVID until he cast in his Pfizer stock. And then as soon as he cast in his Pfizer stock, he said, hey, guess what? The virus isn't that deadly. It's a low infection fatality rate. It's kind of like the flu. It only affects elderly people, but it's like the flu, but a little different. So that's what he used to say. And I wonder what stock he just cashed in, James, because now Bill Gates has reversed himself on climate change, saying that people will be able to live and thrive no matter what. In fact, here is the memo he dropped. And it says in a few decades, cataclysmic climate change will decimate civilization. This evidence is all around us. Just look at the heat waves and the storms caused by rising global temperatures. Nothing matters more than limiting the rise in temperature. Fortunately for all of us, this view is wrong. This is what he's saying now, that it's wrong. And that it will not lead to humanity's demise. People will be able to live and thrive in most places on Earth for the foreseeable future. So I just wanted to get your expert opinion, because you know more about Bill Gates than I think anybody. And you are onto Bill Gates sooner than most people. And so what do you make of this? Did he cash in a stock I didn't get a report on, or what is going on?
Yeah, actually, you're bang on the nose with that. I think there are three things going on. One is that clearly the climate fear-mongering agenda is failing, and the pendulum is swinging on that issue enough that I think he's smart enough to get ahead of this, because I think there are a lot of people who have made this part of their identity that are probably committed to it and can't get away from it. Gates is making the change right now. And one stock that you might want to look at, I mean, he's invested in all sorts of you will eat the bugs and you will like it fake meat kind of stuff. And one of those stocks is Beyond Meat, which you might have seen recently had its stock absolutely crater. As part of basically the big consumer rejection of those types of, I can't believe it's not meat type of things that are going on right now. So I think that's one of the economic factors that he's reading the tea leaves on. Another one, is, hey, have you noticed that the big story now isn't like, oh, we're using too much electricity, we have to cut down on coal and gas. No, it's like fire up every plant we can because we need to feed the AI data center monstrosities that we're creating. And so Bill Gates and his big tech brethren are worried about that, and to the extent that they're reopening Three Mile Island just for Microsoft. I mean, they want all the energy they can get. So Gates realized they have to change the narrative on that. And then the third part of this is now he's switching the climate change narrative into, oh, it's not about temperature. It's about, you know, human health and that sort of thing, which, of course, as we've seen from the past few years, talking about health and saving the poor people of the world is really just another layer of control. Now they're starting to put it into this basket called One Health, which is a phrase you're going to hear more and more. The WHO, the UN are pushing it now. It's this idea, it's this holistic health thing. You know, it's not just about you, it's about how the plants feel, and it's about how the cows feel, and it's all this. And so in order to look over all of this, we have to give all of the control to all of natural resources over to international bodies like the WHO and the UN. So that's the way they're going to try to reframe this whole argument.
So the AI centers take up immense... They have immense needs for power, and they have immense needs for water also, by the way. And so we've covered that on the show. It's a big problem where these big data centers show up, and then they're sucking all the water from the local community for these data centers. And what do they need? Is it for cooling? Is that what the whole deal is
about? For cooling, yeah. Just because of the amount of processing they're doing, yeah.
It's amazing. And so you're saying that, so he's made the shift from screaming about climate change because too many people, I'm guessing, are asking him why he still flies in a private jet, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, at a certain point, the hypocrisy and the propaganda is just unsustainable. And I think I think he finds there are better ways to reframe this. And on the data center water cooling issue, I will note that about over a decade ago, back when the NSA was creating one of their gigantic data centers in Utah, there was a movement at the time to get the local municipality there to actually cut off the water to the data center, which would have been a great initiative. Unfortunately, not a lot of people knew about it or cared about its existence. But that is one way that people can at least think to fight back against what's going on right now.
So the whole deal is because Bill Gates needs these data centers and he needs power for them. And he knows that we're going to have to frack. We're going to have to use oil. We're going to have to use gas. We're going to even have to use nuclear.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you're going to see a lot of about faces from a lot of people who said they were on the green team, who suddenly love power.
I knew it was about Bill Gates making money somehow.
Yeah,
I knew it was. And at first, he was all on scaring people about climate change because he wanted you to get to eat fake meat, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that was definitely part of it. I mean, there's so many things that he's invested in that you could almost pluck anything. But that's, right. I mean, that's just one that's been in the news lately because I don't know if you saw, but Beyond Meat's stock absolutely cratered.
I did not see that. Well, I used to eat it at first when it came out because I liked the idea of not killing animals. That's a big, you know, I hate factory farming. And, you know, it's an abomination. And so if anything I can do, I'll do it. But then you find out that's Bill Gates behind all this. And he's buying up all the farmland to try to. And then also it's garbage. It's bad for you. It's full of it's like eating a stick of margarine, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And to me, what's worrying is just the overall trend towards the idea that we're going to be eating more, not just more processed food, but laboratory created synthetic foods. And when you start getting into the impossible meat and all of that kind of stuff, you're starting to talk about literally taking food itself, which is the most abundant thing on the planet. It literally grows in the ground. It's everywhere and always. We've had it throughout history. And they're trying to make it so, no, you don't want that icky stuff that grows in the ground. You want this wonderful stuff that's produced in our laboratories that you're going to have to pay for our factory foods. And that's the trend that they're trying to instill. But thankfully, people are pushing back on it.
And thankfully enough, people are finally waking up to that Bill Gates is not a philanthropist, that he's a capital philanthropist, he's a megalomaniac, and he's most likely, good chance, a lot of people say that he is a sociopath, psychopath, and shouldn't he be introduced every time he's on the news? He should be introduced as college dropout and not a doctor or scientist, Bill Gates. But that's not how they introduce him. That's how they introduce RFK. They say, oh, he's not a scientist or a doctor, RFK, even though he's a lawyer who sued those scientists and won, and he sued the big pharma and won. They never say that about Bill Gates. Isn't that interesting? Okay, let's remember that the two biggest people screaming about climate change, neither of them, well, one of them, Greta Thunberg, never finished high school, and Bill Gates never finished college. So,
it's got to say something.
What do you say about climate change?
Good question. So I've been on this since almost day one of the Corbett Report. This was when I was waking up, when I was going down the rabbit hole and finding out all this information. You know, I was finding out about 9/11 and all the central banking and all this stuff. And all of this kind of fit together. And I started to find all this information that I'd never found before. But the one thing that was still the sticking point is, well, all these scientists can't be lying about this, right? And so that was really the last domino to fall before I started the Corbett Report was, oh, actually, I think if I mean, yes, there's a lot of scientists who really believe that what they're doing on the up and up and on the level, but there are huge incentives there's been this creation of this incredible infrastructure for the creation of essentially fake news on the scientific scale with regards to this issue. All the grant funding, if you don't mention global warming in your, biology proposal or whatever, you're not going to get the grant. So the incentive has always been that way. And it was one of those things where I was trying to think, well, what is this about? Why is this happening? But once I started to understand at the sort of the international level, the UN, sustainable development agenda, et cetera, is not about saving the earth. It is about monopolizing the earth's resources under the guise of, don't worry, we're going to take care of it, guys. And then they come in and take over an area and then start, of course, selling it out to their corporate buddies. And we've seen this taking place over and over and over enough that I started to really look into it. So I've done reports on the IPCC. Once every several years, they release their new report, and oh my God, hell in a handbasket, 2 degrees of warming. It's absolutely happening, guys. The thing that they don't tell you about the IPCC, it's thousands of climate scientists, guys. Well, not really climate scientists. It's a bunch of, in fact, their report uses a lot of footnotes to things like World Wildlife Federation, like propaganda literature, et cetera, rather than scientific reports, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing they never tell you is that the summary for policymakers, which is this document that gets put out before the IPCC report and is the one that's screaming about, oh my God, we have to change now or everyone's going to die, is a political document. It is literally negotiated by diplomats. And then the scientific report, which is released later, has to be tailored to match the summary for policymakers. So this is, it's a scam that's happening on so many levels that most people can't even believe that a scam like this would take place, which is, I understand the sort of mental sticking point people have over this.
Yeah, I had it. I was 100% on board with all the climate change propaganda until COVID. And then once I realized, after I got vaccine injured, I realized, oh my God, they've been lying about everything from ivermectin to hydroxychloroquine to the virus where it was originated, who funded it, to the fatality rate of it, to herd immunity, natural immunity. There's still people out there screaming about we should wear masks because it's science. There's no science that says you should wear masks. And they lied about everything. The vaccine stopping transmission, contraction, the mRNA platform. There wasn't a thing. The lockdowns, anything. So once I realized that they would lie on that scale, I started to be open to other scales. And then I realized, oh, well, I already knew Russiagate was a lie. That was a hoax. I already knew the Syrian gas attacks was a hoax. I knew the Ukraine war was a hoax. The Libya war was a hoax. The Afghanistan war, the Iraq, both Iraq wars, they're both hoaxes. So then I'm like, oh, of course, they'll lie about anything and everything. And of course, 9/11, Building 7 was certainly a lie. And that's what made me like, well, maybe let me look at climate change again. And then as soon as you look into it, you realize they're lying.
Yeah,
they always like to say it's the hottest year on record, but they didn't start records until 5 seconds ago.
Yeah, and the way that they manipulate the temperature record, again, that's something I've talked about. So the past is always getting cooler as they're warming the temperatures in the present, so that it looks more, you know, more of an impressive hockey stick, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many ways in which they're lying. But if you want to know sort of the underlying basis for this, I do have an essay in the book called Who Controls the Environmental Movement, which points out the interesting fact that a lot of the early founders of the modern environmental movement and the conservancy groups, et cetera, in the U.S. and internationally, all happen to be racist eugenicists who wanted to control the Earth's population in every sense of that word. And one thing that a lot of people don't know is Madison Grant. What do you think of when you hear the name Madison Grant? The passing of the great race, this person who was writing about the evils of, you know, immigration to the U.S. and all these horrible brown people who are going to flood the Earth, etc., who is also one of the founders and fathers of the National Park Service in the U.S. In fact, go to National Park Service website and they have a page up on him. It's like, oh, it's a troubling legacy, but we can't not mention him because he was so important, et cetera, et cetera. And this is everywhere and all over the place. The founders of the World Wildlife Federation, all avowed, many of them card-carrying British Eugenics Society members, et cetera. People who hate certain classes of people that they think are beneath them. Why are they so interested in preserving the environment, etc.? They managed to switch the genuine and real environmental movement that exists of people who are concerned about all of the crap that corporations and others are doing to the environment, real pollution, real toxins, real problems, and turned it all into carbon dioxide. And what is the ultimate logic of that at the end of the day? Too many people, too much carbon dioxide. We're going to have to get rid of a few people. That was exactly Bill Gates's argument back, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, that famous TED Talk where he's talking about, we've got this many people and this much energy. One of these is going to have to go to zero. These people are obsessed with limiting population, specifically the lower classes in the gene pool, the people they don't like so much. And they use this as their cover. And until we wake up to that level of this scam, I don't think we'll really understand what it's about.
Whoa, that is a heavy level of scam for people to wake up to, James. That is heavy. Yeah, even I... Oof.
It's not pleasant to think about. And that's why so many people avoid this, specifically avoid looking into the history. But the history is documentable. And as I say in the book, I have an essay about this with links and footnotes, so you can go check it for yourself. Do not trust me. Go look it up. Go look up Madison Grant's page on the National Park Service website.
So I'm here with James Corbett of the Core Report, newly back on YouTube. Congratulations to that. And we've all heard this quote by Voltaire, to learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize. So guess what? There's a Navy veteran in Texas. A couple of state coppers came out to his house. Here he is, Adam the Angler. Here's the video of the Texas police showing up at his front door, all because he made an anti-Israel post on social media. Here it is. Let's watch.
Try that again.
We're here because of the comments you made online about the Jewish community.
We're here because of the comments you made online about the Jewish community. Okay.
So what?
No, I'm saying, are you
I have a freedom of speech, dude.
Yeah, no, we get that.
I get that.
We got to make sure that you're not.
Do you have a warrant?
No, that's why we're
here. Okay, you see that sign?
Yeah.
So that says no soliciting. What you're doing is basically soliciting. You understand that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It means you're not welcomed here.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Okay.
Stay off the lawn, please.
Watch, this guy's going to start writing something down. He's going to try to intimidate him. Writing some stuff down, buddy.
With your badge and
I'm
your
writing
belt it, and
I'm
your
writing
gun.
Things down. Right in your face. You don't think this is scary? Look, I have a pen and I'm writing it down.
I like
this
that
is what
said
they're doing, guys.
The
you make comments about the Jews online, they'll fucking show up at your door. This is what they do. This is freedom of speech. This is how much control Israel has over our country.
That does, I like this cartoon. Honey, did you post something negative about Jewish people? That's funny. So, by the way, in those three cops, I don't believe in using comic stereotypes, but if I was casting a movie with three Texas cops, these three guys would have gotten the part. I'll tell you that. You could smell the barbecue farts in their cop car from here. Am I wrong? Come on. So James, what is your take on this?
Well, all I can say is at least it wasn't England, because they would have arrested him if it was England.
Yeah.
So there you go. Freedom of speech for the win. It's absolutely insane. It's ridiculous. What on earth is the First Amendment about? Apparently, it's not about protecting people and their speech. So it's remarkable to me. Okay, so again, my perspective. I'm a Canadian. I've lived in Japan for over 20 years now. I live in those kinds of countries where we do not have even the pretense of free speech, and it's not enshrined in any constitution or any law. So I have, for a long time, I've always thought, you know, Americans, I hope you appreciate what you have in your neck of the woods. But that is disappearing. And to the extent that people allow this to continue, they will absolutely take every last bit of freedom of speech away from you. So beware what is coming. This is a tidal wave that is sweeping over the world right now, and it is not going to be pretty.
Well, again, I go back to COVID, because all the people who I considered free speech, anti-censorship lefties turned into authoritarian right-wing fascists who were pro-censorship and anti-free speech. It was the craziest thing I'd ever seen that happened. I mean, a complete flip-flop. Yeah. And so it makes me feel like they're probably going to be okay. There's going to be a bigger percentage of people that are okay with this than you think. People are just waiting for fascism.
Yeah. And you know, again, it's both sides. I don't want to be the both sides-er guy, but it is true. Whenever your party is in power, great, awesome, limit the speech of everyone else. And, you know, 4 or 8 years later, oh my God, now it's somebody else in power and they're trying to limit my speech. How did this ever happen? Until people, again, realize it's about the principles, the underlying principles, they're going to be stuck in that trap.
And so Gen X Girl did a kind of a good breakdown on this and how this has come to be. So Donald Trump came in, got rid of all the left-wing protected classes of groups and all the left-wing censorship where they call everybody a phobe or a sexist or a racist or a white supremacist. So they got rid of that. But then he just instituted this new right-wing protected class of people called Zionists, which is Jewish people of all stripes and all people in Israel, the state of Israel, UK, government officials of anything. And so here's how it started. In 2019, the UK adopted what's called the IHRA, the definition of anti-Semitism, and incorporated into terrorism law, which means Israel criticism equals hate speech. Hate speech equals a hate crime, and hate crimes equal terrorism. And in 2024, UK peace activists were arrested for online criticism of Israel. In 2025, Trump and 37 states adopted the IHRI. That stands for the International Holocaust Remembrance Association. Is that what that is? And so cops visit U.S. citizens' homes for online anti-Israel speech. That we just saw that happen. Israel lobby-funded House Representative Brian Mast introduced a bill allowing Secretary of State to strip Americans of their passports for criticizing Israel. Remember when you clapped when the Trump administration arrested and deported students for protesting Israel? Well, it's now your turn. So hate crime and counterterrorism, that's from college police in UK, right? So they executive order. So that's how it started in the UK. Here it is in the White House, the executive order on combating anti-Semitism.
Jimmy, the IHRA is the International Holocaust Remembrance
Alliance. Okay, thank you. So the USCIS changed its policy to anti-Semitic activity on social media is grounds to deny green cards and student visas. The USCIS uses the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which makes criticism of Israel anti-Semitic per Trump's executive order. So there you go. ADL, if you criticize Israel, you are a terrorist. That's from October 10th, 2023. We'll keep it going a little bit. The Fourth Amendment restricts the U.S. government's ability to spy on Americans through the Heritage Foundation, the Israel lobby created a roadmap called Project Esther, so our government can outsource surveillance to Israeli, to Israel. Now, this spying operation is going AI via Palantir. So it's called Project Esther, claims anti-Israel speech is anti-American, hence terrorism, claims their weapon of choice is the First Amendment. They are terrorizing America by protesting against Israel, and Esther's data comes from Israel operatives, the ADL, the ISGAP, the NCRI, and the Canary Mission. What's the Canary Mission? It's this.
The Canary Mission is an Israeli-funded blacklist, which since July 2025 has been confirmed to be used by the Trump administration to target students, professors, and professionals who oppose Israel and reside in the United States. This idea is part of an initiative created by the Heritage Foundation, the same group responsible for the infamous Project 2025. In their initiative, titled Project Esther, they state that students participating in pro-Palestinian protest and activism are supporting Hamas, a group that the United States designates as a foreign terrorist organization. Therefore, pro-Palestinian students are considered to be supporting terrorism and are subject to the revocation of visas, frozen bank accounts, asset seizures, and the denial of basic constitutional rights. In effect, the Canary Mission serves as a means to circumvent constitutional protections, allowing the federal government to engage in intelligence gathering activities that would otherwise be considered unlawful. But the Canary Mission is not alone. Palantir, another company closely aligned with the State of Israel, uses AI-driven analytics to maintain private databases on U.S. citizens and currently works with four federal agencies. While government contracting with the private sector is longstanding, the prominent influence of pro-Israel groups within these increasingly powerful organizations warrants careful examination.
I mean, Palantir is a straight-up Zionist organization. They've put out tweets, "We must defend Israel," stuff like that. And so is that chilling to you, James?
It is, because it's the confluence of so many different factors of that kind of not yet violent control and authoritarianism that I was talking about, especially when we start getting the Palantir side of this into it, as people may or may not know. I mean, even Palantir had their first ever board meeting outside of the United States in Israel, of course, because of course that's where they're going to go, because they're neck deep in the Israel-Palestine genocide and everything that's going on there in terms of the AI weapons targeting that not just Palantir, but other Teal-connected groups like Anduril, etc., are supplying the AI weaponry and infrastructure for fighting against the Palestinians, which of course is ultimately what's going to be used against everyone, because as you found out a few months ago in the big exposés that were going around at that time, guess what? Palantir is creating the big database on all U.S. citizens. I don't know how much new news that is, really, because that's essentially what Palantir is. For people who look into Palantir and when and how it was created right after DARPA scrapped their Total Information Awareness Office that people may or may not remember. Remember, convicted Iran-Contra criminal Admiral Poindexter was heading up the Total Information Awareness Office, and it had that Orwellian logo of literally the all-seeing eye irradiating the entire Earth, and they were talking about how they were going to scoop up absolutely everything they could, your credit card history, your phone records, your all the data that they could get their hands on to create a comprehensive profile and map out your entire network and know everything about you. And people went, hey, whoa, I don't think the U.S. should be doing this. So they scrap that and start Peter Thiel and his co-founder, Alex Karp. And they were pitching this Palantir idea, and he put them in touch with the CIA. CIA became Palantir's first and best customer, and they started creating the infrastructure for this Orwellian nightmare totalitarian snooping grid that is now being expanded in the name of whatever, anti-Semitism, whatever they can blame it on. I just find it funny that in a way, when they are saying that any sort of anti-Israel statement is anti-Semitic and anti-Jewish and therefore a hate crime, aren't they admitting that Israel is a Jewish apartheid state? Isn't that what they're saying? I know that's against the rhetoric, but that's what they're implying by that anyway.
I agree with you 100%. Well, it's funny, the people who conflate Judaism with Zionism used to be called anti-Semites, but now they're also called Israelis, right? Because that's what the Zionists do. The Zionists want to conflate Judaism with Zionism, which used to be anti-Semitic. Now they embrace it because they need to. They need to pretend.
No. Jimmy, if you say it, it's anti-Semitic. If they say it, it's totally fine.
Yeah, right. They need to pretend that all Jews worldwide are on board with the Israeli Greater Israel Project, and they're not. In fact, I'm going to show you, there's lots of Hasidic Jews inside Israel that are not on board with this. So the people who are the most religious, then they call them they call them extremists, right? Or they're fringe. Okay, I'm here with James Corbett, and from the Corbett Report, who's back on YouTube. Congratulations. I wanted to show you this. This is from Grok. 29% of Americans are considered low income. That's according to the U.S. Census Bureau. And that's 98 million Americans, 29% of the population. 98 million Americans are considered low income. And what I've said for years is, what do you call a system that takes the richest country in the world and renders 100 million of its population low income? You call that a failed system. That's what I would call that. And then 70% of the people working live paycheck to paycheck, and half the people in the country can't afford a $500 emergency. What do you call that? You call that a failed system. Those are not individuals failing. That's your system, your country en masse failing. And just one more before I get to the video. Highlights, so the CEO to worker pay ratio, it rose from 40. So it used to be a worker made a dollar and the CEO made 42. That was back in 1980. Well, now, as of 2021, the worker makes a dollar. The CEO makes $351. So why do I bring all this up? Well, because they were talking about this on CNBC, and they were talking about a chance for a civil war over this. So now normally they talk about things being left right. Let's watch. Here we go.
Of course, the civil war will probably prevent more billionaires from happening.
So he just said the civil war will probably prevent more billionaires from happening. And they're upset because more billionaires means a healthy economy. That is not what it means. It means a worsening economy and a bigger income inequality and rich and poor and the middle class being squeezed out. That's what more billionaires means. But they're upset about this, and they say the civil war is coming. Watch this.
The civil war will probably prevent more billionaires from happening.
Probably.
We're hearing about that more and more. I think Dalio is spouting that prophecy.
The civil war is coming?
Just the class struggle because it's of...
Not
the,
between the North and South or the Red...
Oh, no, no, between the... exactly. Like, let them eat cake, guillotine, Gotham type stuff. Mamdani?
So, there it is. So, that normally on cable news, they only talk about left-right. Well, right there, they talk about what James Corbett talks about in this book, up-down. So they're talking about it's not left versus right. It's up, down. It's the masses against the oligarchs, the billionaire class that actually run everything. And that's going to be the civil war. They just said it. And this comes from Ray Dalio, famous billionaire guy. He sounds the alarm over a looming civil war in the United States. Our power to hurt each other has never been greater. It's been more than 160 years since America's last civil war, but billionaire Ray Dalio is warning that another one may be brewing. In recent interview on Leaders with Friends, Dalio was confronted with a blunt question. Could we be close to another civil war? He didn't hesitate. We are in wars. There is a financial money war. There's a technology war. There's a geopolitical wars, and there's more military wars. Then came his more unsettling assessment. The United States itself isn't immune. We have a civil war of some sort, which is developing in the United States and elsewhere, where there are irreconcilable differences. He outlined two paths that the country could take. The first, more hopeful scenario, is one in which Americans rise above it and realize that our common good is going to necessitate us dealing with it so that what works for most people is going to work. But, as he admitted, that may be a little bit idealistic. The second is far bleaker and more likely. I think that these conditions will become tests of power, by each side. It's a stark warning, especially from someone who also cautioned earlier in the interview that our power to hurt each other has never been greater. This isn't the first time he's sounded the alarm about America's internal fractures. In a recent Twitter post, he said, from studying 50-year-plus civil wars and revolutions, it became clear that the single most reliable leading indicator of civil war or revolution is bankrupt government finances combined with big wealth gaps. And the U.S. is edging dangerously close to that description. I would say it's not edging. I would say we've been there for a long time. The U.S. debt has climbed to $37 trillion with the debt-to-GDP ratio of 125%. That's up 100% from a decade ago. He's warned that when debt rises relative to income, it's like a plaque in the arteries, eventually choking off spending. Meanwhile, wealth inequality has ballooned. The wealthiest 1% of Americans now hold 31% of the nation's net worth, up from 22.8% in 1989. By contrast, the bottom 50% watched their share shrink from 3.5% to just 2.5% over the same period. Those widening gaps combined with rising fiscal strain are precisely the kind of warning signs Dalio says often precede civil wars and revolutions. If his warning has you on edge and wondering how to protect your wealth in turbulent times, it may be worth considering assets that can help weather a crisis. That's why I say call my friends at Monetary Gold. James, what do you say to this? First of all, it's surprising to see CNBC talk about a different kind of civil war. It's not left-right, which it isn't, right? And you talk about this in your book extensively. So go ahead, take it where you would like.
Okay, I think there are three levels of warfare that we're talking about here. The first and overarching one that is already happening is the fifth generation war on everyone. So for people who don't know, military theorists have been talking about four generations of war for a long time. There was the old kind where armies would line up on battlefields and shoot at each other. That developed and developed, and then we started to get the guerrilla warfare and things that we saw in Vietnam. Then fourth generation warfare. Now there's something called fifth generation warfare, which is essentially the governments of nations warring against their own citizens economically with biohazards and biosecurity threats and with information warfare, everything that you can think of. Basically, the oligarchs who really run the country, not the politicians, trying to control the masses in various ways. But when the population starts to wake up to realize, oh, hey, there's this warfare, and I think it's the government that's warring against us, what do you do about that? And that's when you start to get into that revolutionary war kind of thing that the CNBC hosts or whoever are fretting about. Oh, my God, this might prevent more billionaires from rising. At that moment, I think there is that kind of crisis moment of realization and, hey, we've got to do something about this. The question is, what will the oligarchs do about that? And we saw in 2008, the last time we saw that sort of realization, hey, what the hell is happening? Suddenly there's a $700 billion bailout on the table. Remember when that was a lot of money? And people were starting to, too big to jail, all of that sort of stuff. That's a revolutionary moment. People start rising up. You got people on the right in the Tea Party. You got people on the left in Occupy Wall Street basically saying the same thing. We're the 99%. There's 1% at the top that's trying to control us. So what do? They make everything about transgender bathrooms. And that becomes, the big talking point of the 2010s. And bye-bye all of that talk about, real revolutionary stuff. And now we're just going to war about the culture war. So I think the strategy and the way they've tried to kick the can down the road is by fomenting not the revolutionary spirit, the civil war. They want us fighting with each other.
Yes.
No, it isn't the oligarchs that are keeping you down. It has nothing to do with those people at the top with the billions and trillions. No. It's your neighbor. Because they voted the wrong way or they wear the wrong color, skirt or whatever it is. Whatever it is that's dividing people, that's what they want to press. So they want civil war, not revolution.
That's very well put. That's exactly that's been the message of this show for a long time now, that they want the left and right fightings, because if we realize we have more in common that divides us and that we share a common enemy, which is the oligarchy, then we'll come together. So they have to make sure we don't come together. And the way they do that is to keep us fighting over bathrooms, keep us fighting. Michael Schellenberger, I saw him do a whole presentation on this, that, when he had Occupy Wall Street and we had the Tea Party, they were both complaining about the same thing. They were both saying, hey, why are the banks running our lives, wrecking our economy and pocketing cash doing it? And while we have to get kicked out of our houses and we all feel the pinch of a recession, and they wanted to come together. And so they had to stop that. And so Michael Schellenberger makes the point that that's when you started to see all these in newspapers and in the media talk about racism, talk about nationalism, talk about Nazis, talk about white supremacists, and then talk about the bathrooms and trans issues. It went off the charts, right? That what really spiked in the mainstream media. And let's remember what Chomsky taught us, that the media is not there to give you the news. I know people still turn on the TV and read the New York Times because they think they're getting the news, and what they're not getting that. You're getting, they're manufacturing your consent for the oligarchs' agenda. That's what the news is there for, which is why they passed the Telecommunications Act in 1996, which took us from 50 different giant media companies down to six gargantuan, colossal, unimaginable giant media companies. So now it's easier to control. You just have six companies. Everybody who works in journalism or media is going to end up working for one of these six companies. And one of the six of the media right now in America is owned by a violent Zionist who is a very vocal Zionist. He owns Israel loyal person who now owns a sixth of the American media, one person, and they own TikTok. Same people, and it's all at the behest of Zionism. So it's getting harder and harder to make that case that they don't run the media when one guy buys the media at the behest of Israel and Zionism. That's exactly what you were talking about. They completely tried to stop the revolution. They don't want a revolution. Neither does Bernie Sanders, by the way. They got him to take the revolutionary energy in the Democratic Party and funnel it back into the Democratic Party, which is an anti-worker, pro-war party. It's pro-Wall Street. You can't be pro-Wall Street and pro-worker. Those things, they don't mix. Those, and so they've decided to become the party of Wall Street. And idiots, all my idiot friends in Hollywood still think that Democrats care about workers, even though Joe Biden squashed a railroad union strike, which would have set the template for workers nationwide. And of course, he had to squash that. But anyway, anything else you'd like to add to this? Because this is really, it was really shocking when I saw them on CNBC talking about the 99% coming together against the 1%, because that's what that is.
Yeah. No, well, all I can say is this is a revolutionary moment if we understand it for what it is. But unfortunately, as you say, the media is such an incredibly important part of this, shaping people's perception, not just telling people what to think, but basically putting the framework on how far they're allowed to think on any given subject. And if they frame everything in a certain way, they can get people to stop thinking of it in those revolutionary terms, which is why it's even interesting, as you point out, that they're even talking about it this way. You would think they would try to put it into some sort of left-right. It's about Trump politics or whatever. No, they're starting to understand. Well, they're at least letting on that they know that this is about real revolution. And that's what we have to do, I think, in the independent media, is stress those factors that they're usually never going to talk about on the mainstream news.
Well, it's like how they had to pretend that Barack Obama was some kind of communist socialist radical. Because they had to keep that left-right pretend game going, right? They had Barack Obama was the biggest tool of Wall Street. That's the irony. His entire cabinet came from an email from Citigroup. The Citigroup bank and on Wall Street sent an email to the Barack Obama campaign with a list of people they wanted in his campaign. Every one of those people on the list ended up in his campaign. So that just shows you that it's already. So the Republicans and Democrat, it really is a show. It really is theater, because Barack Obama did almost exactly what John McCain would have done, did exactly what Mitt Romney. In fact, he gave us Mitt Romney's health care plan. That's what Obamacare is. It's Romney care. And so this goes even more to the point that this left-right divide is completely manufactured to keep us divided, which means we can keep us controlled. That's my thesis, right?
Yeah, that's it. But don't worry. I'm sure Bernie and AOC are going to save us all with their anti-oligarch tour in their private jets.
In their private jets. They're taking private jets on an anti-oligarch. By the way, they didn't have anything to say about the oligarchs for 4 years when Joe Biden was president. Isn't that funny? In fact, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris had more billionaire donors than Donald Trump. But right now, they're upset about it. They're upset enough to take a private jet over to your city. Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But again, that's why I think people are starting to understand this, and they'll never talk about the awakening that's happening on the nightly news. Never, ever expect that the revolution will be televised. So again, it's up to voices like ours to at least point this out and to let people out there who think, oh, I'm the only one who understands what's going on. I'm the only one who sees this. No one else. No, you are not alone. There are many, many, many people who understand what's going on. And when we start uniting on that issue, then there's a real contest going on. When it's about civil war and about fracturing people along party lines, then we lose.
Do you think that will happen? Do you think that the people will? I mean, I've seen hope of it. I saw Christian Small start a union at the Amazon Fulfillment Center on Staten Island, which is made of Trump voters. So I was a black guy getting Trump voters to join together to oppose the oligarch, Jeff Bezos, one of the biggest ones. Do you see that happening more? Do you really think that that could happen? Because that's if it doesn't happen, we're over as a country.
Yeah. Well, I'm in Japan and it's the same boat over here. I mean, I think unless I saw some possibility for this happening, why would I even be here talking to you? I'd just be off drinking myself to death or whatever. There is a possibility that we can have that shift, and we have to understand that it's enemy propaganda. Don't worry, lay down. There's nothing you can do. It's all taken care of. We control everything. No, they do not control everything. In fact, the power of our society rests so much on us giving our time, our energy, our resources, our attention, working in the jobs to create the things for the oligarch's economy, that if we en masse understood that and opted out of it, we could have a difference. And, you know, that sounds like, oh, that's never going to happen. Well, I don't know, when the SNAP program suddenly stops working and all of these 1/3 of the American population that's struggling to make ends meet suddenly can't even feed themselves, that is truly revolutionary times. There's a reason why let them eat cake is the quintessential oligarch out of touch phrase. It's because, you know, when people get hungry, that's when the guillotines start coming out.
When is the SNAP benefits due to run out?
I believe November 1st, right? Isn't that when the first non-payment is going to happen?
Oh, no kidding. So they got it. They've got to figure out something on this Epstein vote, because they got to get the Congress back in session, because that will start a real revolution. A lot of MAGA on SNAP. A lot of MAGA need their health insurance subsidies for Obamacare. A lot of MAGA need Medicaid. A lot of MAGA need Medicare too. So that bill's coming due, and I predict bad things for the Republican Party, which it doesn't matter, because the oligarchs don't care if it's the Republicans or Democrats in power. They get exactly what they want no matter what. No matter who you vote for, you get John McCain. You've heard me say that a million times, and that's what Donald Trump is proving to be. He already bombed two countries at the behest of in the first 5 months of his presidency, bombed two countries at the behest of Israel. He's still funding the Ukraine war. He's not stopping that. Now he's trying to overthrow Venezuela. He's going to. And we'll see what happens. Anyway, there's a million things. He did close the border. So I'll give him that. He closed the border. Congratulations. All right. James Corbett, everybody check out this book. It's now. Is it now in paperback? Is that what the big deal is?
It is now in hardcover. There's now a nice, juicy, wonderful hardcover that is available at reportagebook.com. And there is an audiobook coming by Thanksgiving.
It's a great book. Every time I pick it up, you know, it's laying on my desk, and every once in a while I'll just pick it up and start thumbing through it again. It's just mind-blowing. It's really, you have a real clear way of speaking to people and articulating the real problems, not the fake problems that people think are the problems, but the real problems. And the real problems are up, down, top, down. They're not left, right. All right, James Corbett, congratulations on your YouTube channel being restored. And did they give you all your subscribers back too?
Theoretically, but I think, like you, I'm not on that juicy corporate algorithm, so I am not getting the views anymore that I used to get. Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, you are borderline content, my friend. Mm. Yeah, yeah. As am I. Anyway, all right. Pleasure to always talk to you. Good day in Japan. Hope to see you again soon.
All right. Take care. Thank you.